high desert in the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's time zones, covered all they are by this radio program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. This is the weekend edition. And we're going to take calls this hour, open lines next hour. We're going to talk with a man who's investigating one of my favorite subjects, mass consciousness, in a very special way, through the web, really. His name is George Uhr, and it should be a very, very interesting evening or morning, depending on your perspective. Let's take a quick look at world events. Thrilled by the apparently flawless landing, and it was, of the Spirit rover on Mars, NASA scientists pored over photographs and other information Sunday, awaiting a stream of even more tantalizing data, and worked on the days-long process of getting the robot ready to roll. Spirit made a nerve-wracking but safe landing on Mars late Saturday on what scientists believe is the rocky bed of an ancient lake that once may have harbored life. Martian life. Yes, indeed. Well, we are down safely, and the first photographs have rolled in, black and white. We're going to get color photographs about 1:30, or 3.5 hours or so from right now. Be the first color photographs. Got a call from Richard earlier. In a feisty first debate of the election year, Howard Dean drew fire from fellow Democrats on Sunday over trade, terror, taxes, and then calmly dismissed his rivals as why co-opted by the agenda of George Bush. He said, I oppose the Iraq war when everyone else up here was for it, said the former Vermont governor, invoking the issue that helped fuel his 2003 transformation from a mere asterisk in the polls to front runner. British Prime Minister Tony Blair made a surprise visit to Iraq on Sunday. Doesn't think it looks so good in a way, declaring the occupation at a critical stage with just 6 months to go before giving order back, you know, self-rule back to the Iraqis. His top envoy warned that insurgents are growing more sophisticated and planning bigger attacks. In China, I'm sorry to say, some 10,000 cats in wildlife markets were killed in its southern province of Guangdong after genetic testing suggested that a link to a suspected SARS case might be the problem. And once again, extra security checks delayed a British Airways flight to Washington Dulles International Airport on Sunday, as the U.S. entered a third consecutive week on a high state of alert for terrorists. Now, not being an expert in these things, I don't know, what does that make it? Something like a dozen flights that have been detained so far. And the only part of this that I don't understand, and of course I understand, you know, detaining flights, I would be thankful if they would do that for me, if they thought there was somebody on board who might be going to, you know, drive it into a building or blow it up or whatever. But what I don't understand is why, out of the delay of 10 or 12 aircraft in totality, counting the ones from Mexico and everything, why haven't they arrested anybody yet? If they think they've got a name, and you would think they would not delay an airliner unless they thought they knew who was about to do what, then they'd maybe let him get on or start the boarding process and nab him. But not yet. Pop star Britney Spears' first marriage is going to be one of the most brief, even for Hollywood. The 22-year-old married Jason Allen Alexander, a childhood friend from Louisiana, about 5:30 in the morning in Las Vegas, of course. And so I guess it'll be over as soon as it begins. Oh, by the way, I've got a pretty cool photograph. If you've ever wondered how I get the signal from here to there, we do it by a satellite uplink. And pictured in my webcam right now is a picture in my backyard of the satellite uplink that carries the signal to the geostationary satellite 22,300 miles above Earth. And there it is. That is the very dish that carries my voice right now. A meteorite has hit northern Iran. As if they haven't had enough trouble, a meteorite came crashing in on Friday, did damage some property, but there were no immediate reports of casualties. Now, the people in Iran are probably wondering what's going on. I mean, if you've had an earthquake, a big one, and then you've had a meteorite crash, you're probably going to begin to think you're getting a message of some sort. Anyway, open lines coming right up. So you've got the phone numbers. Just pick up a telephone and we'll rock and roll. Well, here's some good news. I think the headline is Earth changes its spin, baffles scientists. Yeah, I love those headlines. In a phenomena that has scientists puzzled, the Earth is right on schedule for a fifth straight year. Experts agree that the rate at which the Earth travels through space has slowed ever so slightly for millennia now. To make the world's official time agree with the Earth, usually required scientists, well, back in 1972, they began to add an extra leap second on the last day of every year, a leap second. For 28 years, scientists repeated the procedure, but in 1999, they discovered the Earth was no longer lagging behind. At the National Institute for Scientists and Technology in Boulder, a spokesman, Boulder where they've got WWV, Fred McGann said that most scientists agree the Earth's orbit about the sun has been gradually slowing for millennia, but he said they don't have any good explanation for why it's suddenly on schedule. So, I don't know if that's an important story at all, or maybe it is. But what worries me about it is that scientists don't understand why it was lagging behind, nor do they understand why it's caught up again. So, maybe we have a problem. Houston. Famous abductee Betty Hill is now celebrating a status of being the oldest living abductee. She was taken aboard a UFO with her husband Barney in New Hampshire in 1961 and says, quote, "They grabbed us to see if we were similar to them. I can understand why they were interested in us physically. I don't hold that against them to this day," end quote. She's 84 years of old and ailing now. And I talk to Betty every now and then. She's a daytime person, would love to have come on the show, but, you know, just can't stay up this late on the East Coast. And by the way, she said that with the exception of the eyes, which were larger, the aliens she saw were very much like humans, the big difference being the eyes. They were much larger. All right, open lines promised, open lines delivered. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, is this Arbel?
It is indeed, and your name?
This is Joseph, I'm 12 years old, and
wow.
My friend, he had told me that I actually got possessed one night, and well, it seemed that I got up and said, "Where's my lifesaver?" And he's like, "Do you mean your inhaler?" And then all of a sudden I just scream. And then I fall down. And this happened 10 times in a row.
And what do you think you were possessed by, Joseph?
I think I was possessed by either the devil or one of his minions.
Do you? Why do you think the devil or one of his minions would pick on you?
I think it's because my mom also was picked on by one of the devils, and she ended up doing sit-ups in bed, actually, with one of her exes. And also, since she also named her dog Lucifer and stuff. And since
she named her dog, she named your dog Lucifer?
No, she named her old dog Lucifer, and since I'm one of her children, I think that the devil wanted to pick on me, too.
You think you might be a bad seed, Joseph?
I think so.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you find yourself looking in the mirror occasionally and seeing the devil in yourself?
Sometimes I do.
You do?
Yeah.
Do you find yourself having, I don't know, evil thoughts?
Yeah, actually I do, a lot of times.
I've seen movies about people like you. They're just about your age, too. Probably better you don't watch those kind of movies.
I might have seen one of them.
Really?
I think so.
You don't think that's what did it to you, do you?
No, I doubt that. I think it's my brother. I think he turned me all bad because my brother, he's younger than me. But one time he just made me so mad and so angry that I literally shouted out and screamed so loud to where the whole neighbor could hear me.
I have no idea. I guess you should see an exorcist, Joseph. If you really think you may be possessed, that's not a good thing. You'd want to cast that
it's
out.
That's pretty scary.
These days I have no name to give you to send you to get that devil taken out. I'll tell you what. You get in touch with me by email, and I'll see who I can put you in touch with, all right?
Cool.
All right, Joseph. Anybody else wanting to get in touch with me may do so. I'm artbell@mindspring.com or artbell@aol.com. Man, can you imagine being 12 years old and thinking you're possessed, or in fact being possessed? Either way, rough stuff. Wildcard Line, you are on the air. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Art.
Hi.
Hi, this is Russ. I'm from Long Island, New York.
Hey, Russ.
I'm a StreamLink member, and I absolutely love StreamLink. It's fabulous.
It's pretty handy, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You can listen to it during the day anytime, except when you want to call in. You got to stay up.
Yeah, we have really entered a new age. StreamLink, satellite radio from space and elsewhere. Boy, the world, the internet. And that'll be the subject tonight, by the way. Mass consciousness and predicting events by the internet. It's really a fascinating time we live in.
I love it. Absolutely love it. And I'm excited to tell you this, Art. I've had this information in me from 1977. July 26th of 1977, we had that, 25th, we had that big blackout in New York.
Oh, yes.
The 26th, which was the following day, we still had no electric. And it was a very clear, crystal clear blue sky. I guess you could just verify that by checking the weather from, back then.
Sure.
I had a sighting along with my sister and brother of 6 UFOs. Now, interesting, after the sighting, I had a complete understanding of how time began.
That's a biggie.
How gravity works, how to repel gravity.
This is all very large.
And free energy.
Okay, let's slow up a little bit. Can you encapsulate for me and tell me, for example, how time began?
Absolutely.
All right, do it.
Now, this is before the Big Bang. We all believe in our own God. I call him the Creator.
Yes.
When the Creator started, he had a thought to create everything from nothing. Now, you have to realize in the existence of the Creator is surrounded by energy. So when he created, he started with a sphere, an empty sphere, which is our universe, but it was completely empty. The only thing that penetrated that sphere, that bubble, was the energy that surrounded the Creator. This energy was a frequency. The frequency, because of the mass of the bubble, compressed, and it compressed and compressed into matter. The matter started to pull towards each other and compress.
Mm-hmm.
As the matter started getting more and more dense, it started to create an energy within. And because there was nowhere for the energy to go, it exploded into the Big Bang. And if you think about it, that free energy that you're talking about, if you can compress that matter and get it to the point of explosion, just before the point of explosion, that's where your energy is. Anyway, the big explosion happens. The molten matter blows up and starts in this molting state of, you know, molting matter is blown out into the bubble, and in its molting state, it's like a blob of jello.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, it starts to
break up.
No, it doesn't break up. It just starts to stop, like jello, like a bouncing jello, and it just stays still and hardens up. You have to excuse me. I'm very nervous.
That's all right. What I'm interested in now at this point is how all of this actually was imparted to you.
Okay. I have no clue. It just came to me. But let me explain this other thing about gravity.
Yes, all right.
All right. This all, and I did speak to some people about this, but listening to the show for the past year, I started to realize that everything that I knew started to be validated. This black energy you're talking about, I knew about this.
Dark energy, yes.
Okay, dark energy. But I did know, and I did know about, you know, the energy that exists around us, but I had no one to talk to about it. I wish I could speak to Professor Kaku. But anyhow, let me explain a couple of things. Our gravity. I hear on your show that they're talking about the universe expanding, and this is how it happens. The matter that's in space. All right, take for example a couple of things that we do know.
We have very little time here. So.
Okay. If you're underwater, all right, and if you go to the depths of water, what happens to a can? It gets crushed. Okay, now let's say space. Space is like that water. Earth is under the water, say, because of the massness of space.
All right, you're not going to get anywhere fast enough for us.
No, wait, I will. The matter presses up against the Earth. As all of matter in space is pressing against all the planets, that is the gravity. It's the matter pressing on Earth.
Yeah, dark matter pressing. That's the same thing, actually, that Dr. Kaku may have said in a slightly different way. But, yeah, that's right. And that may, in fact, be gravity. Gravity may be a push, not a pull. It's always been traditionally thought, of course, that we were, in essence, pulled to the ground by the mass of Earth, and that's in a way that's right. It may not be right. It may be a push, and it may be the dark matter that's pushing everything, that's causing the expansion, which is his revelation, or that which was imparted to him in some sort of abduction. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, I would like to discuss psychic ability.
In what do you have some?
I have a little bit.
To do what?
Like I can foretell a little bit, like what's gonna happen.
Yes.
Just a tiny bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was sleeping one night and I had this dream like that I found this body or whatever floating next to a river.
Yes.
Floating in a river, actually, I'm sorry. And it was, like, all bloated and gross and stuff, and it was, like, one of those dreams that just wakes you up.
Yes, please call them floaters, yes.
Yes. And, like, the next day, I was listening to the radio, and they said that they had just pulled a body from a river, like, in the same location that I was dreaming.
How do you know it was not a coincidence, simple coincidence, that you had?
Because I had dreamed it the night before.
All right. Do you have any dreams you can impart to us of things that have not yet occurred that we might look for?
Not yet, no.
Well, any moment you do, you be sure and call us. Otherwise, hindsight is 20/20, as they say, right? But anything you can call, we're interested in. From the high desert, in the middle of the night, this is Coast to Coast AM.
Would you pay 15 cents to hear this show in its entirety? That's the daily charge for Streamlink. Sign up at www.coasttocoastam.com. I used to be a hard beating for someone, but the times have changed. The less I say, the more my work gets done. 'Cause I
With Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
That certainly would be me, a creature of the night. Probably a lot of you, too. How you doing? I'm Art Bell, and we're going to go roaring through this night, and it's going to be absolutely fascinating. Little Damien last half hour was pretty interesting, wasn't it? We'll be right back. It is very nearly a full moon out there. I don't know if you've looked. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art. This is Mike from Louisiana.
Hello, Mike.
Hey, I had a quick little story about something that happened to me about 10 to 12 years ago with some demons, and I wanted to get your thoughts on the story after I told it to you.
Demons. All right.
Yeah.
Demons. What happened?
Well, this was like some time ago. Me and my sister was present. She was well above age, so I know this wasn't something I was just imagining. I'm going to tell it to you just how it happened and let you take it from there. Well, basically, we were in the room discussing things in one of the back bedrooms, and we had three dogs in the house. All three dogs scattered towards the room, went under the bed and in the other room, and in this red light appeared underneath the door, and as I was pushing the door, trying to close it, something was pushing
back
towards me, back.
Mm-hmm.
That's really about all I can remember about it, because it was such a long time ago, other than the fact that it was scary, and
but then,
when I rebuked it with the Bible, it went away. But,
well, what? Oh, I see. So it never got you?
Oh, it never got as far as gotten me. I mean, I've had this same entity in my dreams at other times, but this was actually in reality because I have somebody that, you know, confirmed that it actually happened.
Well, I don't know. If you're having dreams, then maybe it did get you.
Well, I mean, the same person that had the same experience with me has told me about experiences that she's had with it other than...
Well, then, see, and she was there, so might have got her, too.
Well,
see,
I mean,
you,
is it something that could be following her?
You should be looking in the mirror and seeing if you see a little devilishness in the corners of your eye.
Well, I mean, since...
Like little Damien.
Since I've moved away...
Well, that wouldn't matter. Once it's in you, brother, it's there. So you check that mirror and you let me know.
Okay.
All right. Well, good luck. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
This is Billy, one of the many truck drivers who listen to you every night.
Yes, sir.
Currently in Georgia, wanted to relay some information I received from friends and family who were active duty military. And I'm retired military myself, but it seems to be that forces that are East Coast forces normally, they're slated for the Middle East and they're stretched thin over there, have gotten orders to get into the Pacific just as quick as possible. And,
really? Massive numbers of troops moving from Europe and elsewhere in this country to Asia?
Yes, sir. The USS Nebraska, another nuclear sub, a guided missile cruiser, all East Coast units, and an air wing that from what I've heard.
Well, okay, let us suppose this is all true. Why? What sudden interest do you think there would be in the Pacific region for us?
The rumor that I've got is Taiwan.
Taiwan.
So I don't know if things are heating up with China because of the space race and Taiwan making noises, or North Korea. But I'd be very interested to hear from other listeners who might be hearing that.
All right. Let's see what we can find out. Anybody else know of mass troop movements and assets like aircraft carriers and submarines, nuclear submarines, into the Pacific theater? That would certainly be interesting. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello?
Hello, R?
Yes.
Oh, how are you tonight?
Just fine.
I'm calling you from Moosic, Pennsylvania. My name's Patrick.
Okay.
About a month or two ago, Art, you had a guest on. His name is Matthew Alper.
Ah, yes, the God part of the brain.
Yes. I've currently been studying his book, and I do find it very compelling.
It is? It is compelling. That's why I had him on the air.
However, I do disagree wholeheartedly with the crux of his message.
The crux of the message would be that our brains, our mortal brains, to protect against the fact that we are in fact mortal and will die, are forced to construct an area of the brain that, in essence, instructs us to worship and believe in the hereafter.
Yes, that is his message. But he also maintains that there is no spiritual realm.
Well, that's right, yes.
And that there's nothing beyond the corporeal world.
Yes, he's very adamant on that subject.
Yes. Well, I noticed in his book, for instance, just to give you a quick example, Art, on the subject of glossolalia, he only devotes two small pages to it, and he dismisses it very easily. And this is a phenomenon that I witnessed firsthand. And I know that there is no earthly explanation for this. Are you familiar with that phenomenon?
Well, I am. But you see, Matthew is as, in my opinion, narrow-minded, as broad-minded as he is with respect to his belief, with anything that has to do with paranormal, he's very narrow-minded as you might find many skeptics to be. And that is, if anything, his shortcoming. He's got a fascinating, riveting, and I believe extremely compelling vision. However, his refusal to examine in detail demonstrations of and proof of anything at all paranormal is a demonstration of a closed mind in that particular area. So while he's fascinating, he's not the whole story. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Art?
Yes.
Hi.
Hello.
I just couldn't help but chuckle and listen and comment on my in my own head when you were saying things to people. I have a problem, and I need your help, and I need your listeners' help.
Listening.
Yeah. Last night, and this is just recent, for some reason, I woke myself up by punching with all my strength into the air. I'm glad my husband wasn't there because he was right beside me. But I punched into the air, and I literally tore my pectoral muscle.
Oh, my.
And I don't understand what was going on. I don't remember the dream, because if I did, it would probably make a lot of sense, a lot more sense.
You were trying to get something.
I think I was pushing away something.
Okay.
And what I was hoping is that you might be able to give me some ideas, or that your listeners might be able to help me, because I'm still suffering from this. My muscle's totally pulled.
Well, you need a dream interpreter, which
I'm not.
Well,
I didn't even have a dream. I don't remember the dream.
That's a good point.
If I remember the dream, that might actually help.
Maybe you dreamed you were in the NFL.
Had
a rotator cuff thing or something.
Not me. I'm not into football.
Oh.
This was something like very extreme. I'm one of these strange people that when I sleep, I get physically active in my sleep.
Mm.
I used to sleepwalk.
Are you married?
Yes.
You are?
Yeah. And,
how does your husband feel about this dreamtime physicality?
Yeah, well, he actually has a lot of problems with it.
Yeah.
He puts himself at a distance when I get in bed, because he's always afraid I'm going to hit him in the eye with my elbow as I slam it down. And I also have this tendency of bicycling off all the blankets because I move my legs in my sleep. So when I wake up in the morning, I'm absolutely exhausted because I do all my, these calisthenics in my sleep.
As is probably your husband, you know, from dodging you or something.
Yeah, he's always dodging me.
Well, I don't know.
And the cat is always...
The cat,
finding different places to sleep because
even the cat, huh? Well, I mean, they finally get fed up. It's like, hey, there's other places I can lay down.
But she always sleeps on my feet.
I see. Well, one of these times you're liable to propel her to the ceiling. All right. Well listen, I really don't know what to tell you, and I don't know how to be of help to you, except, I don't know, maybe you should wear gloves at night or something.
Well, boxing gloves?
Yeah.
This is the first time I've ever thrown my own muscle out, though.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
I used to sleepwalk. I had night terrors as a child.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm thinking that maybe something was psychically getting at me.
Yeah, and maybe you were just protecting yourself, so maybe the other guy looks real bad.
Well, I hope he's got a black eye.
Exactly
after,
what I mean.
After all I did with throwing my darn shoulder out of whack.
That's really wild.
It was almost as bad as actually, I think I almost dislocated my shoulder.
Yikes. Well, as I was saying, I saw somebody earlier yesterday dislocate their shoulder, but they were in the NFL. Hey, what about that Green Bay, huh? At least something to be happy about. International Line, you're on the air. Where are you calling from, please?
Hi, Eric. This is Max from Canada calling.
Okay.
I've got a couple comments, question, and a complaint.
All right, Max.
Okay. You know, I was just going to say that the show's been great. You know, I was listening to the callers. The one that was just calling, that it'd actually be a great show to have somebody that does dream interpretation on.
Well, you know, it would. I have some reservations about the dream interpretation business, if it is one. I have some reservations about it. I don't know if anybody can really interpret your dreams. I know they say most times they mean opposite of what you think they mean and stuff like that, but I still don't know if that means I understand really what your dream was about. But yeah, well, I've done it. We'll do it again.
Like another thing I was going to say, you know, I was the last person probably to ever access your website last year.
Really?
Yeah.
How could you know that?
Well,
I mean, did a little thing come up and say, you are the last person?
Actually, no, I've got a counter reading. I burnt it to disk as well.
I see.
You want the number?
No, that's all right.
Okay. My other question is, when are you going to have an Area 51 line for Area 51 callers again?
Anytime I feel like it.
Okay. My other complaint is, because I'm in Canada.
Yes.
It is so hard to go and listen to Coast. Like, it's very hard to go and find a Canadian station to listen to the show.
Yes.
It's like...
We do have a string of them, pretty much, from the east to the west coast of Canada. You're a very spread out country. You're like we are.
Yeah, and it's like the other thing is, like, when you guys lost Como... That really cut out like 3/4 of BC, which is where I am as well.
Yes.
So it's like trying to go and tune into either 1190 out of Portland or 780 out of Reno. Trying to run on a triple skip really doesn't work too good.
Yep, there are nights and there are nights.
Well, you have yourself a great evening, Art.
You too, and take care. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello there.
Yes, it's so wonderful to talk to you again. I just have one request I'd like to make. Someone called in and they mentioned possible ship movements to the Pacific.
That's right.
And you asked if anyone knew about that.
Well, he did, yes.
Yeah, well, if you could not have people do that because there'll be some stupid little E1 who doesn't know any better, who doesn't understand the concept of OPSEC, and who might blow things. I'm only saying this because I'm in the military. And
well, are you then confirming what the caller said?
No.
You're not?
I am not confirming or denying. In fact, I am very far from the Pacific right now. All I'm saying is, if you could just have your...
If it would be true, you don't want it really out, right?
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Because of operational security.
Yeah, but see, there's always a real good out. I mean, you can say, well, it was the Art Bell Show. But then, see, you want to be careful about sounding even more credible and then adding adding to the credibility of the statement now. See what I mean?
Yeah, I'm like I said, I cannot confirm it, or I don't know what's going on over there.
Yeah, but see, that makes you sound like a military guy down in Roswell. I can neither confirm nor can I deny. You see how that sounds?
Yeah, I can tell you this much. I know nothing about what's going on in the Pacific.
I know nothing.
All I know is, please, anyone listening to me, don't call in and transmit ship movement. Loose lips, shink sip. Sink ships.
It's true then,
it's true now, okay?
I suppose so. But again, I say to you, sir, probably you shouldn't have called, because I can assure you your phone call has only made people more suspicious than they were after the first phone call, which they might have just dismissed. So see what you've done.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
See you later. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
How you doing?
Pretty well. Thank you.
Art, the last time I spoke to you, I was talking with Father Malachi.
A long time ago?
Yeah, this is Joe from the mean streets of East Los Angeles, California, KFI.
Yes, Joe.
Anyhow, I want to talk about a certain string of events that happened on your show and the other show. It happened with Lord Maitreya. It seems like you had an exorcist who came after. Do you remember Father Malachi would mention that the Antichrist would present himself in his exorcisms?
Yes.
And then the following exorcist would state that he identified something called Lord Maitreya would actually manifest himself in the exorcism.
Correct.
And then you would have this Luciferian, right, priest, I forgot his name, his website is USMC, something like that. Anyhow, the Luciferian priest also identified Lord Maitreya as being some kind of enlightened, great savior of the world.
So it will be thought.
So, yeah. So here you have a Luciferian acknowledging him. You have an exorcist acknowledging Lord Maitreya, but in the exorcism, you know, itself. So what I want to know is, why does Lord Maitreya try so hard to pretend to be Christ?
Well, because that is as it is written. That when he does come, he will come not as announcing himself as the bad guy you've been expecting, but of course a savior of sorts. And then the big con. International line, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Art.
Yes.
Hi. This is something completely different. This is more along the lines of shadow people and people watching you. And I had a question about mirrors also.
Okay, very quickly.
I always have this feeling, like when I'm taking a shower, like there's this, my closets in my house, and like whenever anything's dark, I have to leave a TV on or a light in my house at all times.
Everybody knows monsters are in closets.
I know, and I cannot sleep in my house, though. I have to leave a light on. I can't sleep in the dark in my house. There's one bedroom. I cannot go in during the nighttime.
Well, once again, conventional thought knows that monsters don't like light.
I know. And my dog will stay up all night just barking at the same bedroom door. And my bathroom, too. Whenever I'm taking a shower, like, I keep having to move the shower curtain and look out. And I also have a large mirror in my home, and I just get this bad feeling about it.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm getting calls from the haunted and the possessed tonight.
Well, I wondered if you ever had anyone on that discussed anything about mirrors or about.
Oh yes, have you ever heard of scrying? And you know, mirrors are paranormal doors to the other side of something.
See, I cannot. My house cannot be dark ever.
Do you realize what could walk through that mirror?
No, I don't want to think about it. But I always, I'll be happy.
Well, I'll tell you this, it's big. And it's got a mouth about the size of Milwaukee, with teeth like you've seen on the worst shark shows you've ever seen. And that's what can come through your mirror. Even if it's a fairly small mirror.
No, this is very large.
Oh, that's very bad. I would definitely keep the lights on. In fact, I'd go get myself another light.
Is there anything I could do?
I'd put a light by that mirror. And I gotta go.
All right. Bye, Art.
Yeah, good luck. Well, there it was. The Hour of the Possessed. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, George Ewer will be here. We're going to talk about collective consciousness as it relates to our web, the ever-growing Internet. This will be fascinating. Stay right where you are.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Well, we're going to have an interesting time of it here. I've got two guests coming up, actually, George Ewer and Cliff. Let me tell you about them. George Ewer was a news director in Seattle from 1970 to 1983. Holds a master's in business administration, focus on long-wave economics. He's a cold holder on 4 patents related to battery state of charge instrumentation, has a patent pending on measuring user-friendliness of enterprise software. He's been senior vice president of an international airline. That's something. A vocational school president has just wrapped up a 2-year sales and marketing assignment for a major software company. His website, urbansurvival.com, focuses on long-wave economics. In June of 2001, George started corresponding with one of his website readers who was using the Internet to forecast future events. And that might be Cliff, who is an inventor and thinker. His personal patents began with machine-assisted reading software, which allows humans to read up to 3,000 words a minute. That's pretty fast with computer screens. This technology is currently being marketed by ebrainspeed.com. That's Echo Bravo Brainspeed.com. Cliff is a self-educated man, having read the Oxford courses for doctorates in economics and mathematics, is currently reading the coursework for chemistry. He is also a self-educated engineer and comprehensive design engineer. He is a software designer programmer, has worked as a consultant to Microsoft, IBM, and he developed the WebBot software that I think we're about to talk about. Web bots. That's an interesting phrase all by itself, isn't it? So somehow all of this does relate in some way to the work going on at Princeton. I'm sure you know about that. If not, we will certainly cover it in some detail. So coming up in a moment, human mass consciousness, I believe, as it relates to perhaps the web, which is a sort of a universal, almost a universal consciousness of its own. All right, let's introduce our guest. First, George Ewer. George?
Good morning, Art. Listening to you most times on WIOD here in Boca Raton, Florida.
Oh, you're in Florida?
Yeah.
All right. And your relationship, and I read a little bit about what you're doing, but I guess you're an economist of sorts, is that?
Well, actually, I'm a software sales and marketing guru.
Okay.
And I have this website. A little background. In 1996, I needed a capstone project for my master's, and I was looking at this area of what's called long wave economics, which is those 50 to 70 year cycles that happen in the economy.
Yes.
And you know, they're called Kondratiev cycles. And I started corresponding with a number of readers of this website, and it sort of grew word-of-mouth advertising, I guess, among people who follow the stock market. And one thing led to another, and suddenly in, well, not quite suddenly, if 4 years is suddenly, in 2001, I started corresponding with a fellow who said there was some interesting technology he was using to forecast economic events.
This would be Cliff, I think.
That's Cliff, exactly.
Okay. All right.
So we began exchanging correspondence, and in July of 2001, Cliff's webbots predicted a major world-changing event would occur.
Webbot.
Webbots. Yeah, Cliff better explain.
Yeah, all right, we better bring Cliff in. Cliff, hello.
Hello.
Where are you?
I'm in Olympia, Washington.
That's interesting. George was in what used to be in Washington, and now you are.
Correct.
Okay, so... Cliff, what in? Oh, and first of all, Cliff, you're not using your last name. Is there a reason for that?
It has less to do with anything other than the personality issue, but it's more of a security thing. Ever since I've been involved with the web bots, I find that my machine is continually under pressure from cracking attacks. And
yeah,
the less
yep.
information I give out, the better, just in reducing the amount of time I spend defending against those.
Yeah, gotcha. I know. I know all about that.
Well, we happened to run into some Chinese source code using our product here, and we've been sort of battling a Chinese project that's similar. And ever since we encountered them, they've been attempting to crack into my system to see just exactly where we are.
My goodness.
The latter is supposition.
Well, okay. Cliff, let's slow up a little bit, and we'll get to all of that. But explain, if you would, what a web bot is.
Well, that's really George's name for it. I always thought of it as spiders and agents. These are intelligent agents written in a programming language called Prolog, which literally is a hyphenated version of programming and logic.
Okay.
And these little intelligent agents and spiders can be thought of as the same kind of software critter that the major search engines use to go out and index everything.
Right. Search engines search the entire web, find websites and descriptions, if they can, about what the general content is, and then list them on the search engines. But people don't know. These search engines, 24 hours a day, they're out there scouring the web, looking for stuff to list. Is that fair?
That's correct.
And so your software is related to that in the sense that it scours the web for something.
Correct. In you can think of us as kind of like the reverse of those sorts of programs that might be run by alphabet soup agencies who look for email to see who's saying what to whom.
I think of them more as a worm, Cliff.
Okay, our program is rather, instead of being a database where it stores the information once it's found the pages it's looking for, it merely takes, if you will, a sample, a small biopsy of that page.
A biopsy.
This disregards the rest of the page and throws back that information to us.
Well, all right. Specifically, when you've got your little worm in there doing its thing, I guess worm is an unfair term to use, but it seems like it's kind of like a worm, sort of. And for you, it's spiders, and for George, it's a bot. But what I want to know what it's really looking for when it goes out there.
It's very complex, and I don't really need to get into the details and throw everybody off into the programming. But basically,
right.
What happens is. We have a series of set URLs to go to.
Yes.
And or we have a series, a lexicon of words that we're interested in seeing if they show up. And so, for instance, we might be interested in the word offshoring. See, originally I decided to develop this because I'd come across the sort of a duh moment when I noticed the link between emotionalism and what was happening with the stock market. And I thought if one could predict how people were likely to feel emotionally about a stock, one could predict whether it was likely to go up or down, independent of such things as fundamentals, earnings, etc.
Fascinating.
And
fascinating.
So that's how it started.
Fascinating. I see what you're doing. So you take any given subject, it wouldn't have to be offshore, but offshore would have to do with drilling and oil and what's going on, maybe what's being discovered and what's...
I was actually thinking offshore more in jobs being taken offshore, that kind of thing.
Really?
Yes, but nonetheless, you're correct. It doesn't have to be, it could be any word.
It could be anything. It could be anything. For example, George could be interested, let's say, in a particular airline stock.
Correct.
As it relates to, I don't know, the possibility of terrorism or something else. And he would want to know if that stock would do well, and you would send out your little creature.
Correct.
We'll call it. And it would do a lot of searching on the web and come to conclusions, Cliff?
No, it's more of a data gatherer at that stage. Then once the data comes back here in vast quantities, all of which is text, by the way, because we don't care about images, because what we're really after is an emotional quantity here to be able to quantify the emotions with which people might be dealing with a particular subject. And so once that brings back all that information, then I have all these prologue programs that go through and compare it, that is, compare the words that have been brought back with a much augmented version of the Oxford English Dictionary. I went through a number of years ago for another software project and obtained a copy of 110,000 English word lexicon from Oxford, and I have supplemented that by putting emotional values to the words.
Huh.
Then we make these little matrices and make some decisions and populate it in a sort of a CAD program, and then we make conclusions.
Yeah, let me explain so Art can and listeners can visualize it a little bit. What ends up happening is after Cliff deploys the web bots, they send back this huge pile of information. And then what Cliff does is he goes through based on timestamps and all the other things involved in this and builds in three-dimensional model space. If you picture a loaf of bread, each slice of bread becomes a layer in what we call model space. And it's actually fairly large. It's, what, 30 feet or so square, Cliff?
60.
60, okay. So this model space gives you a way of looking at collections of dots, and as the collections of dots change over time, you see entities, and entity is a collection of dots, where as you look through this loaf of bread, you'll see maybe halfway down the loaf, all of the dots coalesce into a single area of the slice of bread. And over time, you can see shifts of language this way.
Shifts of language?
Let me give you a real concrete example. Let's say that we're talking about a situation where George's ex-wife stole his car. If we say it that way, if George sits down and he types out, "My ex-wife stole my car," that sentence has certain attributes.
Oh, you bet.
Now, he comes along and says, "She conned me out of my car." That sentence, while expressing basically the same concept, again has certain attributes and aspects that are slightly different than the previous one.
Given?
And we can go on and we can say, ultimately, get it up to the point where George says, some expletive, "jacked my car from me."
Hmm.
Now, each of those has time quantities because the verbs being used, conned, stole, and jacked, have are an attempt over time to express a different concept in our language. In other words, it's not your father's English anymore. we can no longer speak in the terms that our parents used because it doesn't express for us the immediacy, the emotionalism of the world in which we live in. To say nothing of the fact that technology has changed and new words must come into being, we further must apply to those new words as well as old words new meaning.
You're trying to teach a computer to read the emotional value of the return that it gets. With regard
we have succeeded in doing so.
You have succeeded in doing so. And so,
I'm not saying we've succeeded in doing it the best way possible or the only way possible, just one of the ways that are possible.
And it's sort of art like the early days of radio. Remember, little crystal receivers were not very selective. And
you bet, sure.
Really prone to noise.
Of course.
And that's why when we do one of these runs, they almost, the output that we get from this system almost reads like the I Ching, the Chinese Book of Changes. But in that I Ching-like output, there are sufficient hits. The Northeast power outage, that's up on the Urban Survival site.
Now, what are we suggesting is occurring here, and how, with these bots, did you detect the Northeast power outage coming? We're taking a big leap here.
let me give you one more item of background. And that is that by putting our little dots in this scattergram in our IntelliCAD program,
yes,
and then allowing the dots to change over time, we get a sense of motion. And so these dots, which represent language groups and really represent an emotional content, like they represent how people feel in the aggregate,
yes,
about certain subjects, we see that change over time. And so by watching for the changes, we can make predictions. Now I'll let George take it back.
Okay, so at some point, in other words, I can see how this project began as a pure economic aid to attempting to predict, for example, what the stock market or even an individual stock, I would presume.
That was the goal, correct, an individual stock.
Do. And so that's plenty of motivation to be writing the kind of software that you guys are dealing with. However, what you seem to have run into in the process is something a lot bigger than that. Am I grasping this correctly?
You're getting it.
You've got it. In fact, it was rather shocking because while it was very good for my personal small number of shares investment with Microsoft,
yes,
because I saw the turn coming, it turns out that I was also able to look at larger and larger patterns. Now, let me also stop and say that that happens to be my forte in software, is determining very early on in projects what are known as design patterns.
So you, in other words, you began to see beyond the immediacy of what you were trying to achieve with respect to, say, a single stock or whatever. You began to see other gathering groups of dots that indicated to you something else, right?
Correct.
How did you begin to discern that it meant, or what it meant, or what it might mean, or even beginning to decipher?
That started really in 97 when I started thinking about this sort of thing in general. Eventually got to the point where I wrote the software, and then I had one of those, my isn't that odd moments when I started getting back data and stuff that I hadn't really anticipated.
Ooh.
And then just being curious, I started digging into it. It was only after reading some of the stuff that George had up about a subject called the debt bird that I realized that what my...
The debt bird?
Berg, as an
iceberg.
Oh, Berg, the debt Berg, yes.
Yeah, in long wave economics, this is kind of a weird one I'm sure to listen to tonight. In long wave economics, you can look at accumulated debt over a long wave period.
Right.
When you have a big depression like the 30s, you repudiate a lot of debt. And since the 30s, we've been compounding debt. And at some point, debt has to roll over.
Yes.
And gets restructured. And that got Cliff thinking, gee, there's more to this technology than picking the all-time high of Microsoft within 3 weeks.
Well, okay. It's completely understandable why you two started down the path you did and how you got together. And so I see how this has occurred. Well, this is the way a great deal of science happens. You know, they start out looking for one thing or at one thing, and stumble into something much, much bigger. When was it when you had the aha moment when you said, hey, look at this. We've got a whole lot more here than, you know, the requested Microsoft information or whatever company you're looking at. We've got a whole lot more. What the hell is this? When was that?
That was really in June. Some things started changing.
June of 2001, by the way.
All right. That's a good place to hold it right there, you two. Okay, I get it. You see, folks, where we're headed here is down the Princeton Road. We're talking about, as reflected in the web and collected by the bots that these gentlemen send out on the web, lots and lots of information from, I guess, the mass consciousness, because that's what it's all about, emotions, right?
And then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard, and they use them to help us to find.
Take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Well, all right. This is a certified ride for sure. I've got it. I finally got it. I know exactly the ground we're going down. You all know about the experiments done at Princeton, don't you? I think that mass consciousness may well be the most powerful force in the entire universe. And maybe that's sticking my neck out a little bit, but I do believe that. And I think Princeton is looking at the beginnings of that, kind of with their own crystal set, in a way. They put out all these little things they call eggs, not bots. And these are computers spitting out random numbers at different geographic locations scattered around the world, reporting back to Big Mama at Princeton. And there, they really have driven the chart right off the graph right off the chart every now and then by getting reports from these computers who suddenly, for some reason, begin not acting in such a random fashion, but suddenly acting with some coherence. And that coherence shows up as a spike on a graph, reported by all these computers. And so what is it sending these computers right off scale with the non-randomness? Well, it's the human mind. And it would seem to spike around large national events like 9-1-1. Just send it right off the chart. We actually have the chart. We could see it. And so this to me was an amazing thing, followed up by some, by a series of experiments that we did here on the air. One of them in conjunction with a show we did on what was going on at Princeton and elsewhere. And now come George, comes George Orr and Cliff. And I think they've walked into exactly the same realm. They've just taken a different corridor to get there. They were sending out these, well, bots, they'll call them, into the web. And they were assigning numbers to words for emotional value. And their purpose in doing this was monetary gain. Let's be fair here. They were looking at predicting what would happen with the market. An admirable effort, I would say. But in doing so, they were successful in that. We'll ask about that. But certainly in the process itself, very, very successful. And then they began to see more than they were asking for in terms of results. They began to see all kinds of spikes and strange things they could not explain, like the blips seen at Princeton. And they began to put it together. And to me, it looks like they're tapping into exactly the same, perhaps ultimately strong signal when we separate it from the noise. Maybe it is a very strong signal indeed, this mass consciousness thing. But right now, it looks like it's mixed in more than we would want with the noise, signal to noise. You always talk about that, right? Well, maybe they'll find ways to pull more of the signal from the noise, or maybe they will at Princeton. But all at once, I get exactly what we're talking about here. We have found a way through the giant complex web to tap into information that's from essentially the collective, because what is the web but nothing but a large collector of everything, right? That's what the web does. It collects information on virtually everything, including people who have written things and emotional things at that. And so these two gentlemen would appear to have walked into exactly the same beginning room that the Princeton people have. Fascinating. Perhaps the people at Princeton should be listening tonight. We will be, we'll be right back. Certainly there is no greater single source of information, collective, current, contemporary human thought. No greater collection of it on the face of the earth, greater than on the internet. Wouldn't that be true?
Absolutely. No question about it.
Yeah. Was the analogy I gave of what Princeton began to detect with its form of crystal set, and what you gentlemen have detected with your form of crystal set, looking into facts and emotions read by massive amounts of information from the internet. Is it a good parallel? I mean, are you guys sort of looking at the same thing?
It was actually sort of bang on, I mean, spot on, in the sense that where I was used to seeing, as George had said earlier, we plot this stuff using a CAD program, a computer-aided design program that
right.
one might use to design machine parts or something.
Right.
And they have an ability to have an arbitrary space, so I wanted something big, so I just defined an area that was 60 by 60 by 60. And I was used to seeing these little dots representing a collection of information, a data set, if you will,
yep.
moving about in a more or less chaotic and semi-random fashion,
sure.
bearing in mind that each one might represent a company or how somebody felt about an industry or something like this, because we were economically focused. And then one day in June, about the same time I started discussing things with George in 2001, I noticed that we had a sudden shift, and all of a sudden these chaotic little darting dots started taking the shape of a dumbbell, and I was rather astounded.
A dumbbell?
Correct. They started narrowing in the middle as though they were going to form that part of the area that your hand might grasp. And then there was a very definitive bulge at either end. And it's not as discreet as I make it sound, because the dots have a lot of space between them. But nonetheless, it was still rather a startling thing to come up against.
And how do you interpret the meaning of that?
That was the issue. Well, I started thinking, well, what really looks like is happening here is a shift in time and some kind of an incident or some sort of an event. And so what I did was to shift it back and forth in time the way one might take a VCR and move back and forth over a series of frames.
Right.
And so I got a feeling for what was going on, and then I started looking into the individual data sets that the individual dots represented.
Right.
And that's where we get back to this I Ching kind of conclusion, because these data sets are thick, syrupy masses of words boiled down into their essence.
Yeah.
And so it becomes hard to pick out a specific, if you will.
Okay. But even a general, I mean, how did you first discern...
The scary part was the very first thing I saw when I went on into the data set was that the core of it was the set of words that I had chosen previously to represent basically the moneyed interests of the planet. That is to say, how currency flows, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Because that, of course, is... an element of confidence, which is an element of economic indications.
Absolutely, yes.
So my conclusion at the time was that, well, there appears that we're going to have a military accident involving the money center of the United States. Because bear in mind, at the time, we were not modeling terrorism. It didn't even have the word included.
Yeah, in fact, initially, when I read the first WebBot output, and the paper is still up on my site, the conclusion that I drew was that something would go terribly wrong with the U.S. abrogating the anti-ballistic missile test treaty. Because one of the things that became clear in hindsight was when we put up the original WebBot forecast in late June and then updated it July 2nd of 2001, we had no idea that this stuff we were picking off the internet would take so long to materialize.
I'm still not clear, though, in simple language, how you came to either of the two conclusions that you just discussed based on the data that you described. To me, that's where the leap is, and I can't figure out how you made it. So how'd you make it?
You get to the point where you look at the movement of the dots through the model space, and then, of course, the interpretation is to see what it actually represents. And the dots have various different aspects and attributes that go into their creation. And an aspect is a primary collection of words. So an attributes modify those words. So we might find within a central dot that all the others seem to be coalescing around, words like currency, dollar, Fed, this kind of thing. The attributes then might be those words that brought in the emotionalism,
yes.
Usually verbs, many times adverbs, sometimes prepositional statements, et cetera.
Right.
Make sense?
Yes, it certainly does.
Okay, because see, it's not going to come back and say New York City, but we might indeed get some geographic indicators. The more data we have, the more layers we can put on there. And some words actually, by their nature, not merely place names, but other words indicate direction and are, for instance, primarily used in the South in form of regional dialects, so give us a geographic pointer.
All right.
Yeah, and Art, if I could, in the original WebBot work, we did get some directional indicators. There were actually three that we put up on a map. One of them was an interesting cloud of geographical indicators that was moving over Las Vegas toward California, and that was in late June, which is interesting because that's about the time that the No Good Knicks were off partying
in Las Vegas.
So, needless to say. It was mind-boggling to me when I woke up on my sailboat in San Francisco, where I was at the time. My wife and I were there. I woke up the morning of 9/11, watched it in the aft cabin of the boat, and called my friends and then called Cliff and said, "Did you see what happened?"
Yeah.
And we're both sitting back going, "Wow, cool.
Well, I was particularly crushed because I lost my entire legal and patent team in the incident. They worked at Sidley Austin, which was pretty well
devastated. I'm so sorry. But how...
And I wish I'd known, you know, but of course, would anybody have done anything if someone wild-eyed showed up and said, hey, look at this?
Okay, how much information did you have about the incident itself?
We had a great deal of information that was meaningless at the time, because, for instance, you can turn these dots and you can say to the program, show me the geographic layer. And as George said, we saw clouds over Washington, largish cloud over Washington, New York area, and another one over Vegas. Or you could turn it and you could say, show me this particular layer and this kind of layer. We had many details that indicated something was up, and we interpreted them.
Okay. With the Princeton information, they actually graph the noise. You know, if you've ever seen an oscilloscope, for example, graphing a noise floor, they graph the noise floor of the normal random nature of the computers that they've got planted out around the world.
Yes.
And then when things begin to go non-random, they receive that input, and it shows up as an actual little rise in a graph of the collective consciousness doing something, coming up way up off the noise floor, and either knowing something is about to happen or... they're not exactly sure what it is they're seeing, but they're seeing these giant responses to events like 9/11 and a lot of others. This work has been going on for some time now. And I'm wondering if you see a similar, for example, on 9/11, did you see a similar spike that you would yell and scream was that far above your noise level?
We did, but it was in June. It was months ahead of schedule.
You saw it.
You saw it
in June.
In late June, early July.
Your main concerns were economics, or were you off understanding it meant something very different than an immediate economic situation for you? Or
bear in mind, the economic situation that I was looking at was not necessarily personally focused, because at that time I had no further interest in the stock market per se, because I owned no stock. So I was just interested in a general curious kind of a way.
So you had already turned.
Correct. And at that time, but because the central focus of it had been economic, and we kept picking it up as a military accident involving the money center of the United States / the world.
Right.
With all of this other aspect about it, not realizing that when you think about a military accident in a strange kind of a way, it sort of represents a terrorism.
You know, Art, in radio, there's a very good analogy to the problem we're looking at. When you think about something called spread spectrum,
yes,
that's where you've got pieces of information.
That is a very good analogy. Spread spectrum is transmitting perhaps sequentially on many, 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 many frequencies at once. So there's just a sort of a general rise in the noise floor, if you can measure anything at all, if you happen to be listening on a scanner or something like that. I mean, spread spectrum to the individual frequency is almost transparent. You just don't even know it's there.
Exactly. And that's really what Princeton's doing. They're picking up the change in the noise as a burst of spread goes by.
Right.
What we're doing with web bots is we're trying to get, you know, we'll take a sample, but we'll only pick up appropriate pieces of that spread spectrum signal sporadically, because we're still working on how the heck do you decode this stuff.
Yeah.
Also, bear in mind, theirs comes through a purely mechanical approach, in the sense that the devices sit out there, pick it up, and react or don't. What we're doing is much more subtle, because we're working with the mind as a filter.
Yours actually might be, I don't know if it's more subtle or if you might argue it's more specific. I'm not really sure yet. But I don't think the people at Princeton have begun to discern yet what these giant spikes mean, whether it's good stuff, bad stuff, where it might be. that sort of thing. It's just something that is coming from, you know, they're measuring that's apparently coming from the collective consciousness. Since you're using words and assigning emotional meaning to those words, it, one could almost argue that yours is more specifically targeted than theirs.
And you would be correct, and the underlying focus of the whole thing is really the fact that Princeton is approaching it from an academic. We don't have to make a profit off of this, whereas we're out here trying to survive by our wits alone, and it's not that easy.
Well, could you have made lots of money using this in the stock market? Because that's, you know, that's how the whole brainchild here began, right?
That was the goal.
So, have either one of you become rich in the market using predictions made with that software yet?
Only because in my own case, I bought gold like crazy at 260.
Oh.
Following the original work.
Based on what you saw as an output, right? Well,
right.
Then at 260, it's over 400 now. Well, gee, you're doing very well. Okay. That was one big question. Now we'll proceed into the, I don't know, the, I guess the heart of what's coming, because they will have predictions for us based on what they know.
With Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and that's exactly where this program belongs, right out on the edge of what's happening that's barely discernible in the most exciting field that mankind will ever plow a furrow, and that's the human mind. This is exactly where this program ought to be. My guests are George Ure and a gentleman who declines to call himself anything but Cliff. Once again, George Ure and Cliff, and I think it's very important for the audience to understand again, Cliff is not giving his last name simply because of the sensitivity of the programs and the code that he's writing and the fact that he's using it openly on the web, and he is subject to many a web attack, as you might imagine he would be. So for that reason, he's not further identifying himself, and I identify with that problem. Believe me, Cliff, I really do. So,
I'm sure you do.
Yeah. So you guys did okay with gold. Now, Now, do you realize, I guess by now you have both realized the implications of the program are much bigger than just making a buck, right?
Absolutely. In fact, following the 911 event, when my wife and I got our sailboat down to San Diego, Cliff and I responded to a Department of Defense Broad Area Announcement, or BAA, and I consider myself pretty darn good at PowerPoints, but you see how difficult it is to explain what we're doing.
Yes.
And the problem with this broad area announcement was I had to boil everything, including 2 years of budget, down into a single PowerPoint slide.
Wow.
And so, you know, if somebody sent you a PowerPoint slide that said basically, hi, we think we can see the future, we need a couple of million bucks,
yeah,
a lot of bandwidth.
Yeah. Yeah, I clearly see the problems. Lot of bandwidth. You would need a lot of bandwidth.
On the other hand, I just sent you an email so you can actually see the timestamp on it. We have informally passed some of the more recent webbot outputs to the military.
Oh.
And I forwarded to you a timestamp copy which was sent back to me at my request by some friends in the military, and I forwarded that to you. Please don't use their name or which unit and so forth, but it documents that we forecast what seemed like, well, appears to have been the Northeast power outage 45 days before it took place. The timestamp that you have is July 2 at 1:50 p.m.
What did you at that time say was going to happen? You looked at all the information and concluded that there was going to be a power outage?
Well, not exactly. Cliff had, in late June, done a scaled-down run of the webbot looking for the next terrorist attack.
Right.
And so what the webbot said was the entity is, and I'll read this verbatim, the Wahhabi entity is seen as preparing an attack on a site with aspects of South, with specific references to a place where the wood in the earth grows upward. Nearby will be an energy plant filled with tremendous effort work. The target chosen for the entity has associations with a vertical wall ascent, which is near which is a low land or low-lying area from which there rises power and influence or confluence. This latter may suggest a site where a power plant sits at the base of a cliff or naturally occurring wall.
Uh-huh.
Now, it goes on from there, including interest, you know, some of the more interesting phrases. Further, there are references to an empty city nearby the target, and one of my website readers suggested that sure sounds like an electrical switchyard with rows of transformers, because that looks kind of like an empty city when you think about it.
You know, in the manner that you just described what turned out to be the power outage, I would have expected a very similar output, if you will, from a remote viewer. I mean, in almost the same language, in fact. Not quite, but almost the same language.
Yeah, but the difference is they had $100 million or whatever.
Well, I know.
Yeah, I mean, this is like a couple of wing nuts in a garage deal.
But let's not miss Art's point. I also noticed that sort of thing when I first started doing the interpretation, that all of the language seems to, in the process of boiling down to this thick, syrupy mass, also seems to condense down to what I call the archetypes.
Yes.
Not the Jungian archetypes, but nonetheless, the same sort of archetypes that, you're correct, are presented by remote viewers and other people that are wielding some form of, like, psychic phenomena.
Well, the language of description sounded very similar.
And we also find it in the I Ching, as George noted earlier. It seems to go back. I've also noticed similar things in even older books like the Parables of Zoroaster.
All right. As you have described this process to others, whilst no doubt begging for funds to get the bandwidth to proceed on a larger scale, what kind of response back have you received?
CIA thought it was interesting.
Did they?
They actually have a little venture capital group called IntelQ,
Yes.
It's actually in Q-Tel Clip always.
Yeah, sorry, I'm a
dyslexic on that one.
That's been one of my issues, is that I'm self-taught because I'm not a particularly good student. So schooling was an issue, but education is not, if that makes sense.
It's all right. Intel's in all our heads.
There we go. In any event, they the CIA sent us back a nice little letter. I had to prepare a business plan for them, which I did. And they
really?
Said, boy, this is interesting, but and we sure would like to look at it further, but... Basically, what it came down to was, it's a little on the left field kind of thing, and we've already funded 7 projects, and we're not even really sure how to categorize this. But it sure is interesting.
It sure is interesting, and they sure sound like they're interested. Perhaps if you can move to the next level, take it to the next level, get a little more documentation under your belts on this, you'll get more than just passing interest.
That may be. It's a very onerous and difficult process without the funding behind it. Doing
of course.
That kind of thing at a two-man level is excruciating for both George and myself.
How much bandwidth are you working with now?
At the moment, I don't want to say I'm stealing bandwidth, but I'm big borrowing, and people have been very kind to run some of my programs for me. So basically, we're dealing with cable modem kind of thing.
Right.
And I should be dealing with T1s, at a bare minimum, fractional T1s.
At least.
The difference really is the number of reads we get. I'm working now with 1, maybe 2 million over the course of 3 or 4 days, and I ought to be doing 100 million a day.
Well, it's still amazing what one can do with even limited but, you know, general broadband capability. I mean, I can understand how you're getting the results, but just try and imagine if you had... computational power, thousands of times greater than you've got now, as in perhaps a Cray of some sort, and unlimited bandwidth, heaven only knows what you might come up with.
Well, you're describing what the Chinese have.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. They're, what was it, Tinghua or some such place?
The Chinese?
The cauldron, yeah.
The Chinese? What do they have to do with it?
Well,
are they offering you bandwidth?
No, they're running a similar project, apparently.
How do you know that?
Part of our program, Art, is the spiders themselves are looking for particular words.
Yeah.
And they carry around with them a lexicon, and they sort of, like, sweep little bits of the Internet. Now,
then, bit down simply, have your spiders met their spiders?
You have it.
Oh,
it was
my
an
God.
An accidental handshake, and we caught some of their source code.
Oh, my. Really? You caught their source code? Or some of it?
They were using a type of spider that ran on a Unix box that loads itself. It goes and reads the robot.txt file at the head of each Unix server and then loads itself and runs on that server. I don't run that way. I don't take the processing resources from the servers I'm accessing.
Oh.
But they were stealing processing time, if you will, and I caught some of their source code
because
it was resident on a server I was sweeping.
Ooh, nasty. Nasty, nasty.
That's what they thought.
What do you mean? Did you...
Within days of that occurrence, I was under, as was my wife's machine, we were under pretty much continual attack for, I want to say, the better part of 2 months. From China, from Hong Kong, from Taiwan, from Bulgaria, Romania,
Holy
Russia.
Mackerel. Holy mackerel. Really?
Oh, yes.
So... Not only did you get some of their source code and meet one of their bots, but they know you exist as well now.
That's pretty much it.
And once they found out you existed, there was hell to pay. In other words...
Let me say that even today, this was... George, when was that we first encountered the Chinese?
Let's see. I think that was when we were... right after we did attack on House or Assembly...
So that would have been November-ish of 2001, perhaps.
Yeah, right around the time of the anthrax attack, which we unfortunately, because I'm on a different computer than I was on the boat and yada yada, we had numerous other hits along the way when we ran the bots. We picked up some aspects of attack on House or Assembly. We got some aspects of the American 587 crash. And interestingly, in February of 2003, we were picking up all kinds of things. having to do with maritime disaster, great maritime disaster.
Really?
And that turned out apparently to have been the Space Shuttle Columbia disaster, which was a spaceship.
Columbia, the gem of the ocean.
Right.
All that.
Right.
But that's the problem with this I Ching kind of stuff.
Of course.
We just need more power. And interestingly, and I think I can say this safely, Cliff, the Chinese project apparently is taking much bigger chunks of text, which means they've probably got mainframes rolling.
Let me ask a question about the Chinese source code, if I could.
Sure.
Was there any way at all to decipher any aspect of that Chinese code? And if
it was written in straight C.
Yeah, and if you were able to, how similar an approach were you able to discern they were taking with regard to what you do?
That was what was so shocking, was that to a certain extent they were operating off of some of the same design patterns that I had also discovered. So I recognized almost instantly, as soon as I saw the few function templates that I had captured, I recognized them as being that same algorithm. And so I went looking for, within that chunk of code, I tracked it down within my input from my bot and went and read the entire 2048 bytes. That's all that I bring back is 2048 word chunks. And I was actually looking at their code, and it was remarkably similar. Mine is more efficient because I'm poor and don't have the resources that they're putting towards it. So whereas their whole lexicon is based around phonetic groupings, I've distilled everything down to integers just because it's easier for machines to deal with integers than it is word groups.
It must have been an awful shock, suddenly realizing, uh-oh.
I think George heard me in Florida when I discovered what I was looking at. Because first off, I saw it as validation. Bear in mind that for years, since like 97, I'd been pretty much toiling in the little garage here, not even knowing if my basic premise was successful or would be successful.
Well, do you have any sense of the source in China? You probably wouldn't. I mean, is it another guy like you?
No. We know precisely where it's going. We know where, because of the Chinese, by the way, the way they approached it was to have their spiders use other than SMT, other than usual email connections. See, mine used to email me the data back. Theirs doesn't use email. It sends it back through a regular IP channel, and so had certain clues as to where it was going. And so we actually found the place in central China where it was headed to, which turned out to be a military city.
Really?
Yes.
So you have run into a Chinese program emanating from a military base looking at exactly the same kind of information you're looking at. Any feeling on how sophisticated their code was compared to what you seem to be doing now?
It's very difficult to say, because bear in mind, of course, all we've really seen is their gathering component. We don't know about their processing component. True, there were clues in the gathering component as to what they were looking for, but no clues as to what they might be doing with it once they had it.
Well, but any clues in the gathering section of the code that would would have you make a judgment about the sophistication of the program's entirety?
The judgment I was making was based on having been in software for 20-plus years,
right,
and being a C master, and then seeing how they approached it. They were not concerned with bandwidth. They were not concerned with volume of data, so they had all kinds of potential processing power. And correct, there were some clues as to what they were interested in, and they were very much interested in the same kind of emotional aspects, the, if you will, the confidence factors relating to both economic and military. And in our case, specifically of the United States, but I don't think it's limited to that.
That's been your one instance of running into another entity, if you will?
Correct. We've discovered no one else's code or software, but once the Chinese became aware of us, we were suddenly a little hot spot from all over the planet.
And then the onslaught, I guess, huh?
Correct.
Was it your view that they were trying to that they recognized perhaps that you were not a large enough operation, and that attacking you electronically would prevent you from progressing.
No, that was not my that's not my opinion. I think that what they were attempting to do was to probe and see exactly what I was doing. It's relatively rare to encounter other intelligent agents on the net and to be able to see that your source code, for instance, in this case, was taken. So they must have been rather startled, just as I was. And so I think they were just more curious as to, well, what's this guy doing?
Yeah, I can imagine so. So you think the attacks then were aimed at...
They were cracks. They were not...
Cracks. They were trying to get information from your computer.
Correct. And
these weren't like denial of service attacks or anything
like correct. That. Correct. It was nothing at all like that. They were attempting to probe and get in on specific IP ports. And see, I run, for a time I was interested in doing security work, and I made a honeypot out of Prolog. And a honeypot is a thing that monitors your ports and pretends to be a particular operating system to sort of invite them in to see what they're going to attempt to do. And so I could sit there and watch some of their attacks initially until I got bored with it.
Well, what did their attacks... So their attacks told you that it was all an attempt to crack.
Correct. They wanted to see what was on my hard disk, and they were attempting to specifically look for source code relating to DLL in a compiled or exposed C form.
Oh, brother. All right, this is fascinating stuff. George Ure and Cliff are my guests, and what they've walked into. My goodness. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. And roaring through the nighttime, this is Coast.
Find out more about tonight's guest. Log on to coasttocoastam.com. What I feel, I can't say. Talk with Art Bell. Call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
What these gentlemen have stumbled on, of course, is enormous. Does it surprise me? Well, yes, a little bit, but not that much. Because when there's something like this, the human race can something new, like mass consciousness, control of it, monitoring of it, using it for forecasting. When there's a new force that's suddenly realized, it's typically realized in many places, if not simultaneously, very close. That just seems to happen to the human race. Ideas seem to coalesce in the human race at about the same time. Well, this is fascinating. Once again, George Ure and Cliff. Gentlemen, do you think that today's psychics are going to be replaced tomorrow by computers?
You want me to tackle that one, Cliff?
Go right ahead.
Oh, it's real simple. I don't think so. The psychic experience is usually an individual thing, at least when you have one of those things happen to you yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of individuals and exploring their own consciousness, I don't think computers can replace it. On the other hand, there is this what seems to be a spread spectrum kind of thing where certain types of knowledge of the future appear to be dispersed broadly across the internet if you know how to lay 7 or 8 layers of prologue against language shift.
Right.
You know, Dean Radin's work up at boundaryinstitute.org
yes.
Was really one of the markers that I found very interesting. And if you haven't read his paper on time-reversed human perception, it's really a classic because what he demonstrates is...
I'm a gigantic fan of Mr. Radin's.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely phenomenal brain power. And what he demonstrated in a lab is that 5 to 6 seconds before you see an emotionally charged picture, your body begins to react before you've actually seen it, implying that you've got 5 seconds of lead time at least that's measurable in a lab.
The thing is, though, the individual human psychic has not been particularly reliable. It tends to be a sort of happenstance kind of thing when you're talking about individual human experiences. And the reason I asked the question about machines replacing psychics is because machines are far more disciplined.
The problem with that, though, Art, is that imagine the situation that we have with psychics. The reason that they're unreliable has to do with the body. It's various changing chemical constituents, hormonal influences, etc. It can't be the same from time after time after time. Yet this is the antenna that we're using to pick up the vibrations that are coming back through us to us on the time stream. And that antenna is sometimes tuned and sometimes isn't. The problem is that our stage here is really what initially George was also of this opinion, was that our computer is not really our antenna. It's merely more our receiver.
Yeah.
We still need the humans as the antenna.
Yeah. But I mean, everything you're saying goes nowhere in saying no to what I said. I mean, ultimately, it seems to me that some future form of what you're doing or, I don't know, what's being done at Princeton, all of this is going to coalesce into a pretty fine, reliable...
Receiver or tuner.
Whatever you want to call it. Much more reliable than an individual human experience.
Let me tell you
how I used to explain it to George and anybody who asked. It's rather odd that you would ask that question about psychics because I used to explain it this way and people could grasp it relatively easily. That imagine that there's 10,000 psychics born to every 1,000,000 people. Only most of these 10,000 don't know they're psychic. They are, but they're just not aware of it. Well, some of that psychic ability is leaking through in the language that they use on a day-to-day basis.
I'm sure it is.
We're just noting the changes.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. But you're doing so in an already far more disciplined manner. So as you refine this, I really do see it taking over the job of a psychic.
There is a problem with it, Art. And the problem with it is that, by their nature, web bots only pick up unfortunately, large-scale negative emotions so far.
Yeah. Well, they're the strong ones that we seem to have.
Yeah, and in the world, in the psychic world, the individual psychic might be able to tune into something more positive.
Don't know. My experience with psychics, people who look at future world events, some of the very best in the world, I get to interview them. As well as people who work in the realm of remote viewing. I mean, all of this I sort of lump together. And when I look at it, frankly, it's exactly the same realm that you all are working in, whether you know it or not. It really is the same realm, I'm convinced. And
you're saying then that you think that more negative information comes back than positive.
Well, I know it does. Yeah. I interview the people who do this, so I know. And so you're getting the same kind of negative stuff.
Well, it may be then that we're limited to that's the tuning on our receivers, our antennas, and we just may have to figure out a new way to tune them.
Huh.
Maybe that we could do that with the computers.
It would be my opinion that you're just getting what's out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably quite accurate.
Yeah, you're just getting what's out there, and you're all looking at the same thing. But you're doing it in so much more of a disciplined way. Where are you going to take, how are you going to go to the next level?
The problem for us comes down to computing power and storage.
I suppose it would, yes.
I mean, literally, we run up against a money wall because in order to take it to the next level, right at the moment, our lexicon that we're working with, words that we match against, is about 250,000 in size. Our original 110,000 Oxford English Dictionary that I more or less borrowed when I was having some discussion with them and then altered for my own purpose, as well as all the new words that we've populated, including geographic references and so on. But that could easily be a million words. Also bear in mind that even though I know a number of different other human languages, I'm not a native speaker of them. Therefore, I'm reluctant to assign an emotional value to a particular word in another language, not knowing, for instance,
of course,
a particular word in Sanskrit.
Well, that's why you need the CIA.
That's why we need linguists to
or
do this on
NSA,
a serious way, correct?
Or, you know, some large agency type.
Yeah, some
but,
deep pocket.
They are the exact people who should be interested in this. Now, have you had any follow-up to the letter from the CIA at all, or are you going to follow up?
We've had some follow-up from them in the sense that they're still interested and they want to keep our information on file, so at least they're not round-filing it.
Right.
But we've also had some discussions with those people that might be considered to be primary contractors for the government under Department of Defense work. And the problem I've run into in discussing the thing with the managers is trying to get the concept across. And while the value is implied, the methodology sounds so strange that it sounds basically too unreliable.
Okay, well, here's the road that I think you're going to have to take. You're going to have to refine this to the point where you do what you just did, even as unsavory as it may seem. You sent me an email with a timestamp on it. You're going to have to begin to log, record predictions, even if they're just very general predictions for a certain time. I don't know how specific you can get at this point, but you know, you're going to have to begin to log a record, and at least, if nothing else, at the end of the day, or quite a few days, you all will develop a record that will defy somebody not to look into how you're doing it. That may be an unsavory way for you to pursue this, but I don't see any other course right now. Do you?
I don't think we're opposed to that, and we've, in fact, been doing that ever since, what, August, George? August of 2001, when we first started timestamping with the military?
Right, right. So yeah, we've got timestamps on I think four or five of the webbots so far.
And they all came out positive with respect to your forecast?
Yeah,
correct, more or less, in the sense that, for instance, when everybody was running around saying the D.C. sniper was a lone white individual in a white van,
yes,
we had information indicating it was two individuals, one with a subservient relationship to the other, related to the military, Islam was involved, and all these other
family problems, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And in fact, it's kind of curious. One of the readers of my website actually sent in the insignia from Fort Lewis of the particular Army group. I mean, we had things that were associated with military paratrooper kinds of things, including globes circling above and so forth. And to us, you know, it's like, okay, we've been there, we've timestamped, and I think really one of our motivations for being on your show tonight is to put it out there because we're confident there are other researchers. And for example, Princeton. I mean, if you took the Princeton Egg Project and married it up with our project, you know, it's like getting a number of different perspectives, and if you can then take all of those
Yeah.
It's like diversity receivers almost.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And there may be others out there. Who knows what kind of research is going on. Again, when was that real aha moment when you describe that again, when you realize that instead of just seeing a sort of a return expected on economic data that you were seeking, which is a legitimate reason to have started into all of this, to begin to see these other things.
That was really in June of 2001. Now, bear in mind, I'd been plotting this since perhaps mid-1999 in IntelliCAD, and I was used to seeing, for all intents and purposes, it looks like fireworks. I mean, there are various different little colored dots that appear to move in short little bursts as I advance the program. And all of a sudden, there was this aha moment, because the movement of the dots no longer was sort of a little jerky and random. They all coalesced into what I was specifically looked like a tipping point. And that's when I contacted George and said, George, thumbs up.
All right. Listen, you, aside from the work you're doing right now, you wrote that you have some concerns about the future of the Internet itself. What are those? What are you worried about?
I think there are a couple of things that are interesting about the Internet. One is that the Internet is this place where consciousness can coalesce into groups, you know, news groups, discussion groups, and so forth.
Right.
And it's not from, you know, when you step back and look at it from the long wave economic perspective, it's not at all dissimilar to the period that happened in the late 1920s. If you recall, radio was the new technology of the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
And when the country ran into a huge economic mess in the 1930s in the Depression, one of the things the government did was slapped regulations on use of radio, and that was all embodied in the Communications Act of 1933.
Which resulted in several thousand radio companies being condensed into relatively few.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There was a tremendous contraction. I think it's a reasonable concern to look at the Internet the same way. I mean, right now anybody can put a server up, as both Cliff and I have done. And I figure it's probably only a matter of time until government figures out that, hey, we really ought to regulate the number of servers because the amount of bandwidth, yada, yada.
Right. Oh, licensing. But, again, we've already seen a huge deterioration in the Internet itself, in the sense that when we began the project in the heyday of 1999 with the Internet bubble really expanding to its maximum point, since then I have found hundreds, literally hundreds of servers that have been taken offline as companies have gone out of business. And these servers hosted far more than just company information frequently. They acted as email servers, routers for
I'm
news
sure.
groups, etc.
Yes. So what are you trying to tell me? I mean, surely the Internet is not in decline. What do you mean it certainly is?
In terms of the total number of hosts, potential Internet server hosts, now bear in mind it's a distributed system. So the more servers make the whole system that much more robust. And if a company, an Internet company in Seattle, goes out of business and takes 1,200 servers offline.
Yeah, that's a big deal, all right. But, I mean, in general, the Internet seems like it's growing in popularity for the people using it.
It seems to be concentrating, sir. I don't want to dispute you because you're correct in specific areas. The popularity is increasing, and for my line of work, so to speak, it's very good because the part of the popularity that's increasing are the discussion boards, the human-to-human interaction that I want to try and capture.
Fertile ground for you.
Correct. But at the same time, a lot of the resources and the computing power that we were using to capture some of that is now gone, in the sense that I don't know how many Internet companies have gone bust in the blow-up, but up in Seattle there were probably quite literally on the order of maybe 4,000 or 5,000 servers that went offline with just that little area alone when its Internet companies went bust.
Might that not be part of the shorter economic cycle, George?
Sure, absolutely. But on the longer time scale, one of the concerns we've had in the WebBots outputs has been that they keep seeming to indicate that from November 2003 forward, and this goes back to some of our 2001 runs, there was some question about the relevance of the U.S. Fed and the future of the overall global economy. And that's kind of worrisome stuff, especially now that since November, the decline of the dollar has picked up speed.
It has.
I'm just noticing, you know, you have the thing from that gold group. We've had the price of gold trading just here in the time your show's been on. We're only $1.20 away from 420 gold.
Wow.
And so one of the real questions is, here we've got this really cool technology, and the threats to it are, one, we could be right, and the Fed could become irrelevant, along with the U.S. Standing as the global reserve currency. Then there's the dropping number of what was the dropping number of servers. I think we've seen it stabilize, and I think we'll see growth resume. But then there's the issue of taxation. When something gets successful enough,
that's right.
You know, government looks at it and says, "Hey, this is a deep pocket for us, and we've got a $44 trillion black hole in the budget."
I frequently wonder how much longer we've got the essential free ride on the internet. Do I sense it's about to come to a crashing halt?
Well, I don't think so, because we haven't really had all of the long wave economic depression markers.
You got to be careful not to choke the baby in the cradle.
Yeah, exactly. On the other hand, some of the things, you know, the last time we made a V12 engine in the U.S. was back in the Depression, and I noticed that I think it's 2004 or 2005, Cadillac's coming out with its V12.
You guys are in the new big business coming for the Internet. I mean, you should think that way. Think big, right?
Well, yeah.
I mean, predicting the future, that's no small matter. Definitely no small matter. So, gentlemen, hold on. That's a big business to be in, predicting the future. Going on out into the Internet. Reading the emotion of the masses. That's what they're doing. And they're getting awfully specific about some predictions. We're going to talk about that more when we get back.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Very interesting, isn't it, that the information gleaned from writing these programs, these bots, and sending them out into the net looking for response from the collective. Really, that's what it is. That's certainly what we're talking about, collective consciousness. It's predictive, and I guess it's timeless. In other words, you can look forward into the future, or perhaps to calibrate what you're doing, like Princeton, you can look into the past as well. We'll ask about that. Okay, listen, everything I'm hearing from these gentlemen makes absolute sense to me. And if you followed along with the Princeton story, the experiments that we've done on the air over the years, and now what George and Cliff have stumbled into, and I think it's fair to say they did stumble into it based on what I've heard. I mean, they had good intentions, surely, in what they were doing. Nothing wrong with making a buck trying to figure out what stocks or the stock market is going to do. Nothing wrong with that in the world. People have been writing programs and trying to figure out ways to take a look-see at what's going to happen with stocks for a long time. So nothing wrong with trying to get rich, and that's, you know, what probably the motivation was, and that's cool. But then you stumble into something else, something totally unexpected like this, and it probably isn't going to make you much money, is it?
To say the least.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, it's probably going to cost you, it's going to cost you money to even get this thing off its wobbly legs and get going, isn't it? It already costs you money, I bet.
It already has.
Yeah,
we've been diverted because we kind of like got our focus shifted once we discovered what it was capable of and no longer really pursued the individual stock kind of thing, and so have kind of, I don't want to say abandoned that, but
right,
took another larger direction.
Understood. All right, I want to tell the audience it's going to be perhaps problematic trying to take calls when we have two guests, so I'm going to be relying on Fast Blast a lot here, which is a way to send us a message on the Internet. Just go to coasttocoastam.com and look for Fast Blast and then fire me off one. Here is one from Richard in Toronto. He says, another interesting thing about the Princeton strike on 9/11, a spike rather on 9/11, was that the chart spiked up a couple of hours before the attack hit, as if to suggest humanity might have sensed something, or the couple of hours prior was when the first terrorists began their move, or it was reacting to the terrorists. When I've discussed this with others, they didn't know. Was this spike representative of some general collective consciousness knowing that something was about to happen, or could it have been reading the minds of the hijackers who were about to end their own lives? These would have been very strong emotions.
I would presume the former, simply because the way I think about it is the chorus line in the theater analogy. You've got a chorus line, say the Rockettes or something, all these nice women going into a theater, it gets dark, they're going to watch a movie on their break or something, and one woman at the end of a row feels something on her foot, and she instantly thinks it's a mouse, and she jumps up and screams. And in the darkened theater, with the heightened tension of the film and et cetera, and one woman after another within this line screaming simply because the woman next to her screamed, we get this generated emotion. Now, I can see that the people that are involved would be there, since they're screaming at their own frequency, so to speak, if they had been psychic and or were tuned, could have perceived themselves screaming in the future simply because they're the best antenna for their own vibration. Does that make sense?
I think so, yes. And here's another one for you. I asked this of the people doing some of the Princeton-type work, and that is, is there a way of calibrating your response? Surely what you're looking into is not measured in time. In other words, the future, the present, the past, it's all sort of mushed together.
One big goulash.
Right.
Yeah.
So is there any way, I wonder, after all, we know what's happened in the past, save those politically resurrected and changed events in history. But basically, we know when large, very large events occurred. Is there any way of calibration by looking back?
Unfortunately, to do that, we would have to have had the bots pretty much continuously deployed and have been building model space more or less continuously. then yes, we might be able to go back. Incidentally, there's a run, a very short run. I think it's under 2 million samples that Cliff did over the past couple of days.
Yes.
Which is up on his website. And one of the things that's unique about this particular run is it focuses on immediacy. So, in other words, back to that Toronto listener's question, what seems to happen is there's this shift in language that happens, let's say, 45 to 60 days before a major emotional event. And then a couple of hours before the event, as think of it as this quantum potential for an event moves forward in time, it begins to get into a nonlinear curve and begins, the potential rises at an exponential rate, and at some point as it ascends this exponential probability curve, the Princeton eggs go, yep, that's it, and then the event itself is the actual realization of the quantum change. Does it make sense?
I believe so, and so potentially your method of sending out these bots would be better at longer range predictions than what Princeton has demonstrated so far. Would that be fair?
Yeah, that's. I think so, Cliff.
I would say that that's very fair. That in fact, at this stage, I actually saw the real value in this technology being able to be applied as, say, an overlay to what the FBI or NSA or somebody might be doing on a specific level.
Sure.
To say, don't waste your time looking at that particular area, go and look at this area. It's more likely to find profit for you.
All right. Well, yeah, speaking of that, you're on a national radio program right now, a fairly rare opportunity perhaps, and certainly an opportunity for you to take any data, let's say, for the coming year that you feel at all confident about and getting it out here and now. Publicly, there's nothing like a whopper of a prediction made ahead of time on national radio. It has great effect.
I wish we had a whopper to make.
The run that Cliff just did, one interpretation of the run that was just posted this afternoon was that, or let's see, this afternoon East Coast time, this morning West Coast time.
Yes.
Was that we will, an interpretation is that we could see an attack by a male and female attacker using three explosives to set off some form of respiratory distress weapon in a crowded place, which was approached from a tunnel, and it's very unlikely that's really what's going to happen, but there's something that if the immediacy reads are correct, might happen over, what, Cliff, the next week?
Timing has always been our real issue. I mean, initially we thought the tipping point was going to be closer to July of 2001. I gave it a lesser probability the further we went away from July, but nonetheless, within our boundary of 60 days, it came near the end. So I would have to say my most abysmal failure has been in predicting the timing involved. But George is correct. We've got a reading. At the moment, it has some details. For instance, it says that the attacking pair, the male and the female, will split. The female will pursue a conservative path. The male will question his, mission or whatever you want to say. We also know that of the three falling fruit, which is how it came out this time, that two will be, or one will be saved was the actual wording, and that may be able to be interpreted as three projectiles or bombs or something, one of which would be stopped from exploding. Might be the reverse, because we don't know which viewpoint it has. In other words, is this seeing this from the viewpoint of the attackers or from the defenders?
Okay, circling this up, you're telling me there's going to be a biological attack.
No, not biological. It'll cause respiratory distress. That could be
chemical.
Well,
I assumed, I'm sorry, it could be chemical. Okay, perhaps a chemical attack. With two or three bombs perpetrated by a man and a woman. Is that
correct? But now also look at this. Let me be very specific since we're getting in this.
You are getting very specific.
No, I mean much more specific than that in the sense that The data that I gathered, I did so over the past 4 days. And since we don't have a lot of data, we don't have enough to cause a shift forward in time to apply that to it. So we're looking at a snapshot, not really a little tiny movie. In addition to that, the projection may be talking about how people are perceiving the current events around the British Airway flights. And I'll let George talk about how we perceived the terrorist attack on the causing the blackout.
George?
Well, yeah, we
saw it as terrorism.
Right, because we were looking for terrorism. And when the Northeast power outage occurred, what's the first thing that went through everyone's mind?
Terrorism.
Oh my God, exactly.
Uh-huh. All right, so did you find terrorism because that was a collective thought, or did you find it because that's what it was?
I got to defer to programming on that one.
That I don't know, and if we did know that, we would be that much further along.
Yeah, okay.
There's many unknowns in this, Art, as you must ponder yourself.
I mean, do all the time. Believe me, I do all the time. And so I understand you're not grasping that aspect yet. So that tells me where you are.
And see, we have to be intellectually honest about this. If we're going to make a prediction, we've got to lay out everything we can and say, we can't go any further because we just don't have enough data.
You were pretty specific about this particular incident. And again, with regard to timetable, it's inside 60 days, you're suggesting.
No, within this one that we've been talking about today, I would say it was within a week.
Within a week.
It may come out that over the next week we find out that the reason that they withheld the British Airlines flights may have been because they were looking for a man and a woman, and what we're picking up now
is
stuff that's hidden.
Could be. Certainly could be. It's been a puzzle for me until now, and really it still is, what they're doing with these airliners. I mean, somehow, this is just basic thinking, but you would imagine that if they had enough specific information about a specific flight, they would have perhaps even names. And so the expectation would be there'd be some kind of arrest that would have come out of all this. I don't know. It's interesting. Pondering their actions, you can imagine what kind of data they have they're working with.
Actually, I feel for them because it's the same kind of thing that we have, this rather muddy, murky stew that you sort of fish around with and you look at the haul something up and say, well, what does this mean?
You don't think, do you, that they're utilizing any technology like we've been discussing tonight as any part of their equation, do you?
Much more likelihood that it's occurring now than 2 years ago.
Huh.
Because they do seem to be getting better at it, don't they?
What we know...
Well, I don't know. I don't know yet. Are they getting better at it? No arrests yet. They've just held up flight. So are they getting...
Well, but at the same time, if you notice, there's a number of arrests that are occurring globally. See, one of the problems or one of the opportunities I have is that most of my formative years were spent outside the United States, so I have a much more global view of things, and I have a tendency to look at a lot of the various different non-United States news sources.
Right.
And we do see a different perspective. We see that there is some more focus, if you will. So they may indeed be deploying something along these lines.
Well,
we
certainly
know, for in fact, that Raytheon, one of the subcontractors, is approaching something like it.
Okay, we know one thing for sure, and that is, knock on wood, nothing gigantic at all has happened since 9/11. So one possible reasonable conclusion would be that our intelligence services are somehow doing a really good job because nothing has happened.
Well, better, yes.
Better, well, right. No major incident. So maybe they're doing okay. That's certainly one conclusion. Your prediction goes down the avenue of suggesting that these terrorists will be successful. In other words, your prediction encompasses the bombs going off.
That's inevitable, though. When one looks at things rationally, we're in a very unfortunate position as the receiving end of asymmetric warfare. We simply have to stand there and be ready 100% of the time, 24/7, 365. So it is inevitable that, our readiness will be found, a hole will be found in it, and something will occur.
The interesting distinction, Art, is how our technology works versus some of the technology that's being pursued publicly by the government. I think everyone's probably heard about Poindexter's, you know, great marrying of all databases into a single massive lookup, and that's worthwhile technology, but it's very focused drill down technology. In other words, Art Bell goes out to the airport, and people can see that Art Bell had a speeding ticket in 1903, or you know, whatever. This technology doesn't give you that kind of drill down. Rather, it says surveying all the people going to McCarran Airport, look for somebody who smokes cigarettes once in a while and has a good voice and is about this tall. There are several ways to approach the problem of intelligence, and Cliff characterizes this as really a fourth-order thinking approach versus a third-order thinking approach, which marrying of databases is.
Fascinating. You can't smoke in McCarran, save these stupid little rooms where you're all choked to death. But aside from that, no, I understand. They do seem to be operating, you know, with that kind of level of data based on their actions. I mean, that's pretty loose, I admit, but after all, we're stopping airliners. We don't know why. We don't know what they're doing.
But it could be something that was picked up by Carnivore or any of the other email surveillance kinds of thing.
Yeah, could have been.
You know, so we don't know. And they could just talk about going from England to America in an email, and that would be very specific, and I'd not want to be on that airplane myself.
On the other hand, if we look at things from our bot perspective,
uh-huh.
If we had the ability to do them in a native Arabic fashion, even if, in this case, the ones who have declared themselves to be the enemies of the Western world, the Al-Qaeda, were using a cell structure, they still rely on familial relationships. So some Al-Qaeda member's grandmother knows something and might make some slip in her language on the Internet that the bot kind of stuff could pick up. Even though she doesn't actually reference what her grandson is doing, we know something is up just because of the nature of the emotional values of her language has changed.
Incredible. All right, hold on, you two. Headed toward the bottom of the hour, George, Ure, and Cliff are here. And for those who understand kind of where we're centered in all of this, you understand the magnitude of what these gentlemen are doing. And perhaps what the intelligence communities are doing. Certainly the Chinese, they seem to be giving it the good old college try, as it were. And one might imagine even our own government's giving it a shot. Maybe that's why we're getting these reactions.
Flowers growing on a hill, dry.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
You see, this is kind of like Journey to the Center of the Mind. That really is what it's like, except it's the collective mind. What a trip to take! Really fascinating stuff. Once again, George Ewer and Cliff. Gentlemen, welcome back. There's a question up here from Charles in Flagstaff, Arizona, and then I want to follow it up with my own. Here it is. Have you ever done a bot search on the Mayan calendar 2012 scenario? Over the next 20 years, he says, broadband's going to go up, up, up. Do you ever see a time when the software will be available to the general public? So let's handle the first one first, about 2012. It would seem a remarkable thing to go and look at the end of the Mayan calendar. Have you ever sent a bot onto the web after that?
Not specifically. It's odd that they bring that up because a lot of the archetypical timing clues that I use within the lexicon are based on what I discovered within the Mesoamerican calendar, and I prefer to call it that rather than Mayan, but we're speaking of the same thing.
Yes, indeed.
And within that calendar, we find that they have 20 named days arranged in groups of 13, and this comes to 260, which is the orbital period of Venus, which coincides with the orbital period of the Earth every so many years, which coincides with the orbital period of Saturn, et cetera, et cetera. And we get to this other area of interest of mine, which has been hyperdimensional or hyperspatial math.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rather odd, as I say, that that was brought up. But the 2012 transition, if you will, from the Mayan long count probably is making its or definitively is making itself felt on the Internet now, because I do pick up an emotional worry quotient, if you will, around that date.
Sure. Sure you do.
But I don't have anything in the way of a predictor as to what might be causing that worry.
All right. Well, right now, you guys are like the striving artists of the cyber world, right? So there's got to be a way you can make some money on this, and I can think of one way, but you might not like it. But nevertheless, I'd like to suggest it. Why not package and sell your code, your program? Sell your program at some point, at least in beta, as a scenario-predicting software program for predicting the future.
Problem is, we would have to send a human along with it. Bear in mind that really what we end up with at the end of the software...
Well, I know, but all you need to send is a lesson in evaluating the results. Send a little videotape of that for $29.95. See, I'm trying to help you guys here.
Sure. I understand, Art. I'm not really throwing up an objection so much as is countering with some of the complexities involved, in the sense that I have often questioned whether any of the emotive values that I've assigned, while showing some level of meaningfulness, are really meaningful in the broad scheme of things. So just because I've signed a particular value to a particular word or group doesn't necessarily mean that someone else would interpret it that same way. So what we have here at this stage is 9 Prolog programs, some C programs, a big IntelliCAD situation that's run by an AutoLisp program, and then I sit down and drill into all of these words with this lexicon. Believe me, no one would ever want to run this as a recreational kind of a product.
Well, see, what you've got to do is wrap all that up into a program that'll run on Windows XP.
I love it, Art.
Well, I'm trying to think market here, you know?
Yeah.
And I figured you'd love it, because I can see which side of this you're on. And this, you know, so this is one way. You really could do this. I mean, if you could sort of work this into a program that would run, it would be real popular and you would make money.
Well, you could actually use the technology in a little different way. You could build something that would scan all of your incoming emails and would tell you what people really think about you. Because it's a lexical shift over time.
You know, if I were to run that with my current email, people would, they would think that I'm under-deprived in my manhood. Because there'd be so many of those that would come through, you know, the patches and the lotions and the potions and all the rest of that. So how do you, I wonder how your bots, do they get affected by this horrible onslaught of crap that's on the Internet?
We run into that. We used to run into that when we were using a different kind of intelligent agent because we would occasionally end up sweeping through batched email queues that were on specific servers. But since I've dropped that approach, there was a sort of a sea change in the Internet commercially around the year 2000, and some of the old conventions that had been in existence since the ARPA days kind of fell by the wayside. Along with the robots.txt, which is a file that a guy who runs a server could put up there that would say, in essence, robots stay away or robots can go and look at this area, etc. And that kind of convention went away. And since then, I have stopped using spiders that skip from server to server to server in the main, to be honest, because I was picking up so much pollution. And in fact, we had indeed polluted our own event stream at one point.
My.
Yeah, what ends up happening, Art, is if you think of the Internet, and if you're familiar with a spreadsheet, you know what a circular reference is?
Sure.
Okay, what ends up happening with the web bots is if we're running a web bot run and do a snapshot while the run is still out there, people would pick up things on my website, and like the Gold Antitrust Action Coalition or Antitrust Group
Action Committee
has a bunch of discussions going on at places like La Metropole. And so pieces of my post about what the web bots are predicting show up at some of these financial sites. And then we go out and sweep that same stuff. Then we end up getting this feedback loop going. So it's not really the kind of thing that you can put out there on a, hey, today here's the update on the web bots. You really need to...
I see your problem, and your problem is just like Princeton's problem. They are scared to death, for understandable reasons, of coming on the radio and talking about what they're doing for fear that it will affect the experiment, their ongoing experiments. And I do understand that concern and fear, and that's why you don't hear a lot from them. They really are concerned about that. For you, it was a feedback problem. For them, since they, you know, it's science, they, you know, they're trying to keep their results pure. So coming on the air and talking about it to millions of people could potentially pollute it.
And right. I would not, for instance, do a web bot run for some considerable time, simply because we will pollute it just with the number of your listeners that will be discussing this online tomorrow.
Well, in fact, you haven't done that many recent runs, correct?
That's correct.
Why?
It's a matter of poverty, though.
It's poverty.
Yes, these are very expensive to do, and they're extremely time-consuming.
This would be a tool that a government could use against terrorism, obviously, right?
Correct.
Yep.
But is it refined enough? And that's probably why the CIA only put you in the let's keep watching these guys kind of this is interesting scenario, but we don't know yet type place.
Yeah, I think we're at the point where we've had a lot of intellectual gain from the project. We've had just like playing with radios is fun. Playing with web bots is fun, but we don't know if we can really push the technology any further until somebody with very deep pockets steps up. The reason for it is that, you know, I'm just wrapped up one job assignment in South Florida, and I'm moving to my ranch in Texas on Tuesday. And Cliff is, what do you do after you invent super speed reading and web bots, and you're the prince of SQL?
Your best route to money is the route you were on originally. Your original motivation was to predict the market. If you can make this a usable tool in the market, what problem?
The nature of the markets themselves have changed, and we discovered this back in June and July of 2001, focused on some of our financials. For instance, I will be flat out, and I will state that there is no point for anyone, in my opinion, and I'm stating this as an opinion, to involve themselves in any way shorting any market that's under the control of the United States government or the Fed, because they are indeed being controlled. And therefore, why bother betting in that casino when you know the casino is rigged?
If you know how it's rigged, then you can short the right thing.
That's not moral.
Well, maybe not. What the hell's moral about economics? Not much.
No, but a person has to maintain their own integrity and morality regardless of the perfidy that they may see around them. Just because others are using the casino of the stock markets to scam money and steal from the American people doesn't mean I have to participate.
Ooh, well, that's...
Sorry,
I don't mean to be... No, I have no problem with such a stand. But after all, you guys did approach this from an economic point of view when you started, and before you ran into the larger picture, this was about making money. Now,
correct, and to that extent, it still is. But there was always that level of emotional or intellectual curiosity about it, and I was never going to use it in any immoral way to make money.
On the other hand, Art, I've actually tried.
I can hear that in your voice, that you would have tried. And with what kind of results? I mean, you had good results with gold.
Oh, yeah, gold's been great.
And what? I mean, how else have you done?
Well, specifically, when we had the entities pointing to the U.S. dollar becoming irrelevant, and in other words, the Federal Reserve note, becoming more or less irrelevant at the end of 2003, I tried going short in a massive way with put options on various indexes, and what we expected would happen, the fall of the dollar began right on schedule, but guess what? The market went up.
Yes, but why not just go ahead and bet on the falling dollar? I mean, that's something you had down. Why not bet?
Well, in essence, by buying gold, you are betting on the falling
dollar.
Well,
you're right. You are. Yes, that's true.
And in fact, we have done some special runs for people where I put the web bots back almost a year ago. I did a couple of runs for some European banks. And they did very well as a result of following the advice that came out of it.
Well, and you could have done even better. While you're right about buying gold, that's a sort of around-the-corner, very conservative way to bet into what your machine's telling you. A more direct way would be to simply get in the currency markets and put lots of money on the falling dollar, and then
That's correct, and this is a discussion that George and I have had repeatedly over the last year and a half or so, because I have this rather stubborn streak in me, my dad coming from Missouri.
I can hear it, yes.
I have this attitude that one must create value. It is not merely a matter of shoveling digits back and forth. If you do that, you don't necessarily create value for the universe as a whole. And so I don't find those things to be particularly...
Bet the two of you have had some roundhouse talks.
You have no idea. Cliff is a vegetarian, and until recently I ate a lot of beef.
Oh, my God.
and yeah, but you know, and that's what good collegial exchange is about. I mean, you know, if Cliff comes out with something that I think is nuts, I don't have any problem telling him, and he'll tell me more often than not, many of my ideas are kind of out there, too. But all of that said, we're still both of us sitting back looking at this spread spectrum signal, kind of like contact, and going, what can we do with this?
Yeah, that's kind of like contact after Jody got the signal.
Headphones,
yeah.
Exactly, and we're looking at it going, well, what would be the right thing to do? And, you know, frankly, I think our what we have agreed to.
Well, it sounds to me like actually like one of you has one idea of what to do, and the other has another idea of what to do. And how are you going to work that out?
We already have, I think.
How so?
Well, I think what we would like to do ultimately is find some government agency that we don't want to know who they are or anything. sell them the here's how to go do it, protect the country with it. Not get involved with secret clearances again and so forth, and just turn it over to them and say, hey.
We recognize that we've taken it as far as we can that
right.
way, and you need somebody with to mature it.
Yes.
And frequently, I'm sure you'll recognize the person who discovers something is not necessarily the best one to do the maturation of it.
Yeah, but still... You're just, I mean, you're both prepared to give this away, essentially.
Yeah, more or less.
More or less to the right individuals, right? I mean, it's good for the universe. It always comes back, Art. You know, I don't worry about that.
Huh.
I mean,
well,
we're not even selling anything. I mean, that to us, this is really kind of like Orville and Wilbur did not set off to build a 727. You know, they go, hey, let's make something fly. Well, we've kind of made this thing fly, we think. And we can describe some of the basic aerodynamics of spirits.
So this is why you've had no real recent bot runs, because you kind of came to the conclusion that you've gone as far as you can go with
right.
your resources.
It was the resources that brought us to that conclusion, correct?
If you were to sit down with a potential investor, could you convince him with the information you already have, just lay out the spreadsheets and make your case to the point where he'd throw his money in the pot?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we would want to do it. I mean, if we were going to do it with a private investment group, it would be, you know, kind of like 25% of the profit, normal hedge fund terms. But that's not our concern. Our concern is kind of bigger than that, because when you read the outputs, we got issues like terrorism and how far does a dollar fall?
No, I'm with you all the way. Look, we're out of program. You two have been absolutely fascinating.
When or if...
Listen, we are out of time. What's your website?
Okay.
Give out your website.
UrbanSurvival.com and Cliff's is HalfPastHuman.com.
HalfPastHuman.com.
Right.
And I think we've probably got links to both. Gentlemen, I'm sorry, we're out of time. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Good night. What an absolutely fascinating interview. Wow. A good place to be and a good place to end, I guess. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell, and here's Crystal with the outgoing words.
Good night in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey take us on a ride. You with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it to tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you?